Hello, and welcome to the May 13th call-in discussion group for the TMS Wiki. Today we are going to be doing two chapters from God Does Not Want You to Be in Pain, the new TMS book by Eric Watson and Walt Alexi. We're going to be doing the two chapter fives. The first one we're going to cover is Journaling 3 of Love and Sauerkraut, wonderfully named. And the second one is going to be Eric's journey, known as The Glow of the Faithful and The Visits. It's about perceptions, knowledge therapy, and how to know it is TMS. Before we begin, I just want to remind everyone that there are no medical or mental health professionals on the line, that we are all interacting here as peers. What we understand is our own experience. If you have a medical concern, don't use this as medical advice. You need to see a licensed medical or mental health professional, most preferably someone who understands TMS. With that, let us begin. First, we have Bruce MC from our forum, who's going to give us a brief summary of Walt's journey.
Well, the chapter we're covering, of course, is Walt's Journey, Chapter 5, Journaling 3 of Love and Sauerkraut, a real intriguing name. But Chapter 5, you find, is based largely on a series of personal vignettes that Walt has taken from his TMS journaling assignments. And thematically, it weaves together a series of incidents involving personal betrayal by tenants, friends, family members, namely his mother, who came in to live with him and he found it unbearable, and people who've gone out of their way to take advantage of his good nature. Well, you know, there's Jake and Fran, the couple from California that Walt calls the couple from hell, who deliberately trashed the apartment Walt rented them in order to avoid paying rent. And then there's the would-be politician who took him for $2,000 for consulting fees to do some research for a book, and then never did anything but copy somebody else's work. And then there was his mother, who he felt he needed to take care of because she'd taken care of him, but that he found it unbearable. And, of course, she, in the process, took all of his high school mementos and threw them out high-handedly. He had lots of reasons to be angry with her. And yet, throughout this chapter, Walt, despite all of these things that enraged him, Walt eventually comes to forgive these people. And I don't know how this ties in, but at the end he talks about the mind of animals and how they're unquestioning love. And he uses that example of the elephants who showed up when their defender died. They took a 10-mile hike to Lawrence Anthony's place in Africa to demonstrate their gratitude. I know that biologists counsel against anthropomorphism or anthropocentrism, but at some level, this primitive brain that drives TMS, it seems, also unites us with other mammals. I don't know how far the chain of connectedness goes, maybe not to amoebas, but to mammals anyway. So there's that pattern there. There's rage to forgiveness to a new understanding. And also woven through this is Walt Alexi's return to faith, if not the church of this world, then the ideal Christian church that you hear 17th century divines talk about when the church was splitting up. You know, you hear this a lot in John Donne, John Milton, you know, justify God's ways to man, that sort of thing, sort of serious kind of subjects. And Walt approaches him in a lighthearted way, of course. So maybe there we can start taking off. Is Walt there to comment? Or
yes, hi, Bruce. You do a great job. Thank you.
Yeah. Doesn't he? I thought his post was wonderful as well. Would you like to comment on what he said, or are there any parts of the story of this chapter and what you've shared that you think can help some of the people who are still working through?
Well, I write these chapters hoping that it rings a bell with other people. That they say, yeah, you know, I had a similar experience, and I'm hoping that it kind of. You know, as a springboard for other people to remember. Well,
I managed an apartment house for a while in Denver after graduate school, and I know what you're talking about. There are
I had some terrible tenants. Boy, being a landlord is a lifetime experience.
Oh, yeah.
But I also had some wonderful tenants, and I write about some of them in the book, too. And it's impossible to check on these people's backgrounds because they could have somebody answer the phone that's going to support them and say that, you know, they were wonderful. So you can't trust anybody. You take your chance. Mm-hmm. But that was only one part of that chapter.
I think to some degree it's a metaphor for all of life because we, no matter what you do anywhere in life, there's always going to be those situations. There's always going to be, you know, the tenant from hell who will come in and mess things up. It's
sure.
Not just being a landlord.
It's interesting. Sure. You rationalized your care for your mother very much the way I did mine. Because I figured she'd taken care of me when I wasn't such a pleasant person to be around, 1 year old, throwing up, you know, getting sick, having measles, dragging
well, my
me
mother
to
was,
the doctors.
My mother was impossible to please. She never, ever was satisfied. She went through both of her sisters. They gave up on her. She went through my sister. My sister gave up on her. My brother wouldn't even try. So I took it on myself, and then I realized after 2 years I couldn't take anymore. She asked me to go out and get medicine and groceries for her in one of Chicago's worst blizzards. I did it, lost my parking spot, had to shovel a new place to park my car, walked over, you know, in the snow to her apartment. She lived a block away. And then when I gave her the groceries, she said, oh, I wanted sauerkraut with caraway seeds.
Yeah.
And
you can still hear the rawness in your voice when you talk about it.
Yeah, that was the... I think I've got spring allergies. It was the straw that broke the camel's back.
That was it? That's when you moved her over to your sister, right?
No, my brother came... He found another place for her. She eventually moved to different cities, and for the next 10 years, she was a vagabond, living here and there. She couldn't be satisfied. So,
she certainly seemed to train her family to curry to her whims, I would say.
Well, we all wanted to help her. Oh, God, but there's just so much you can do, and then it wears you out. So I think a lot of people as caretakers understand that.
I think caretaking is one of the classic things of TMS, and you always hear, and it's also tied into the TMS personality, where we want to please people, we want to do good. But it's absolutely enraging when these people, especially when they take you for granted or when they have, you know, when their functionality starts to go down and it's just sad to see them go. It's a lot.
Well, older people are usually all wrapped up in themselves.
Yeah.
They want everybody to help them without any concern for what they're demanding of people. They're all wrapped up in themselves. And that's hard to deal with.
What I thought was interesting, though, was this spiritual progression that you went through from anger to compassion for these people, for forgiving them, and at the same time you were working your way back to an admittedly flawed worldly Catholic church at the same time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I noticed how that parallels what happened to Eric, too, where he moved from using the wine to control his anger, I guess, and being the life of the party. So, and that also kept down the symptoms. And eventually this led to a spiritual conversion, too. I couldn't help but think of Malcolm X, who was Detroit Red for a while in the autobiography, where he was a guy living on the street, and he was taking everything. He was like that last scene of Goodfellas, where that guy's just being pursued. He reached the street where he was just hot on the street. There were so many people out to shoot him, and the only way he could deal with it was just fill himself up with pills. And then one day, it started this liquid love that Eric talks about, and this religious conversion process. And then the next day, he got his voice, and he became Malcolm X. It seems like this is a pattern, a conversion pattern in both of your lives. It's also a conversion pattern in many, many people's lives, too, where they push it as far as they can in one direction, and then they go through a reversal.
Yes, sir. You wrote on it for me. That was totally, 360-degree change after that.
Yeah, it's like some people need to push it to the limit before the reversal takes place. I don't think Walt so much. He's more moderate, middle of the road, but still that same pattern is there.
Do you feel, Walt, that some of the stress that you were going through led to you looking for solace in the church?
No, I was always a lifelong Catholic. I was just disillusioned by the pedophilia and the cover-ups, and
right.
I was even mad at the former Pope. I think he was responsible, too, for a lot of it. So I talked to a priest once, and he said that he has his complaints, too, about the church, but he wants to remain a priest and remain a Catholic, and he said, toss the ball to God and let him handle it.
Yeah, well, John Donne talks, he has an essay where he talks about, this is right at the time of the Protestant Reformation and the time that the Anglican Church was breaking off from the Catholic Church, and John Donne talks about the church being in, someplace in Switzerland, and then also in Germany with Luther, and also in London or Canterbury. And he thinks of all of these aspects, all of these worldly churches, as just flawed representations of this one true apostolic universal church, Christian church. And these are just, worldly representations of it that are not the real deal. The real deal exists someplace else.
I think he's full of shit.
Well,
whoever
was
said that was full of
shit. He was trying.
What I think, I was watching a program the other day, and this guy said, how can we all, who can be right? The Muslims got their God, the Jews have theirs, the Protestants have theirs, different faiths for different people. I think it's just one God. We call them different countries call them different things. It's one God. And our relationship should be more directly with him and not through his church or, the political part of religion. Deliver me from that. It should be more spiritual with God. Whoever you're
Walt,
calling.
Can I ask you a question, Walt?
Please
sure.
Do you, now, I'm a Methodist, although I was raised a Southern Baptist. But I quit going to our church because of what you're talking about and my dissatisfaction with our church.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, do you attend the ministers there? Some of the, in other words, how far they far from the ideal or even...
Oh, for sure. You know, I don't go to Mass anymore because it's too political. I feel like I'm going to a Republican convention when I go to Catholic Mass. So I stopped going. But the last time I went, or one of the last times I went, the priest got up and he said, "Let's all pray to convert the Muslims." I almost stood up and said, "That's the wrong thing. We ought to all pray to get along. We're all praying to the same God." So they got it all wrong, and I thought, why am I listening to that jerk? He's got a white collar, but he's a jerk. So it's more between, I think it should be more between the person and whoever they're worshiping. Forget the politics.
Well, that's what that guy who wrote The End of Faith talks about, how you have to get, you have to attack those dogmas that divide. That makes it okay to go kill someone who's different than you are.
Absolutely. Forget all that crap.
Yeah.
That's political. That's political.
Well, that's what, who is that fellow who wrote, that neuroscientist, theologian, who wrote The End of Faith? Sam Harris. He talks about how that's the next step in religion, is attacking these dogmas that divide. Sort of like John the 23rd and the ecumenical movement. He thinks
we got a great
we're going the right direction now.
The new Pope I love. He's good. He's bringing fresh air to the church.
So
he's smart.
Yeah.
Did that answer your question? Did that caller?
Yes. I was just thinking, yes, I mean, I'd like to go to church. It would help me. But at the same time, when the ministers, I'd like to go. The only reason I like to go to our church is to sing the hymns. I like the old hymns. You know, like from the 17th or 18th century or whatever.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
But it's good
stuff.
Well,
go and tune out what you don't like about it. Tune into what you like about it. Tune out what you don't like.
When I was starting to go through this last summer, I went and spoke to our minister. I tried to. He obviously didn't want to take the time to meet with me. He's like the doctors who don't care how their patients are doing. He didn't care how his parishioner was doing. He didn't want to take the time. And he told me God didn't take care of us. I mean, I know that's a big question as to how much God intervenes in human affairs and how or not. But at
he's
the same time,
us.
We...
He loves us. He's with us.
Right, I'd like to think that he helps us. I know that bad things happen.
Of course he does.
But this guy was telling me, you know, God just lets all these bad things happen. Like that was not what I needed to hear. Anyway, he was so uncaring and uncompassionate.
Just
I don't want to hear
away,
what he has to say
walk
anyway.
Away.
Yeah.
Don't listen to him and tune out what he said.
Yeah.
Whenever you're looking for any sort of wisdom or peace like that, and I think this is core to TMS healing, is you have to go with what sounds right to you. It sounds like this guy, I love Walt's advice. He's like, you know, tune out that part of stuff that you don't like, focus on the stuff you do, but maybe there's too much in this guy that you don't like. Maybe it's too late to connect with this particular minister. Is there another church you could go to? The same denomination.
I've been talking.
That's also a good idea. Go to a different church. Find a different priest gives you spiritual input that you can absorb, that you can feel.
Right.
Well, a Protestant would say you have to deal with your private conscience and not the visible representation in any one minister.
That's good. That's it.
Uh-huh.
I was just going to ask Eric, if you had anything to say, because I thought you might have something to say about that.
Yeah,
it's about, you know, don't put all your faith in a man. Put your faith in, like Bruce said, first of all, if you're a believer, put your faith in God, you know. But at the same time, it's your own conscience that you have to deal with. Basically what we're talking about here, what we're talking about when we have to renew our mind through the reconditioning, because we have unconscious thoughts going on and reactions that we don't know about. So we have to correct that and fix it, you know? So it's through mm-hmm. looking at your, you know, it's through looking through faith through those eyes that Walt and I wrote the book on.
Yeah, you wonder if the fragmentation of faith that occurred at the time of the Protestant Reformation is part of the same mindset that leads to TMS symptomology and to the modern psychology too, for that matter. You sure try and join the two, didn't you, in your Sunday school classes? If we can get around to that. I mean, you're talking about the scripture there to the kids.
I joined one story with a Harry Potter story. I joined a story from the Bible with a Harry Potter story, and the children, I learned their language that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they all became my instant friends at the time. But if I tried mm-hmm. to talk to them, you know, in a different way, then they just looked at their phones and stuff. I knew that I didn't have their attention. But when I got on their level, like we do here at TMS Wiki, we get on their level. You know, when I reply to people and when I want to talk to people like we're doing with Paula, I want to listen. But I also want to, you know, tell them the path they need to take according to who they are. Because we all take the same path all the time.
Powerful words there, Herbie.
Forrest, can I give a little summary of
Eric's
chapter now?
I think that's a great idea. Why don't you go for that?
It sounds like a point of transition here.
I think indeed it is. Are you still here?
Eric. In this chapter, chapter 5, The Glow of the Faithful and the Visit, Eric chronicles his miraculous transformation from alcoholic back pain sufferer to Sunday school teacher and then on to reborn Christian healer. It's Eric connects Dr. Sarno's injunction that you must believe 100% there is nothing physically wrong or broken in your body with Christian religious belief. He was lost in a spiritual wilderness for 10 years. But prayer and faith and acceptance of pain finally gave him a newfound knowledge that strengthens his faith in Jesus at the same time it helped him heal his back pain. And, of course, there's the, the visit. There's this scene where Eric describes Jesus coming to him, an embodied Jesus, a Jesus that's entered into the flesh and flowing through him. And also an archon, too, an angel that appears to him. And it reminded me of Gnostic theology, early Christian theology, where the angels acted as intermediaries in the creative process between God, who didn't descend into this world, being too perfect, and the archons, the angels, the archangels, did the work of creativity. So it was like the angel was passing on the message he got from the embodied Jesus. It was like this neat progression there.
It
had all kinds of resonance to it, theological
Bruce,
implications.
That night, I also had a feeling in my mind and body. It was like a feeling the whole time. Everything I was saying and describing there was all a feeling. And when it was, let me take some here. This feeling I had, it also was like saying to me, basically I knew there was a, this is going to sound crazy, guys, okay? But I knew right then and there when I felt that feeling. When I seen Jesus come to me and close down in on me, I felt that we have life forever, not just for now. It was like he was telling me at the same time, you know, I've got another life after this life. I didn't put that in the book, but at the same time, it was a powerful feeling. It stayed with me for a solid week after, too.
Yeah, and you said earlier that you'd had a feeling of, liquid love that occurred while you were listening to that television evangelist. And
yes, this was all in one night. This was all in one day. That happened two separate weeks that it happened.
Oh.
But this whole story goes from the time I was out weightlifting last week. I come in and I started watching Joel. I started feeling it, you know, the motivational speaker. I started feeling this feeling like my whole body was just healing. And I was taking it in my mind at the time that it was through the acceptance, the mindfulness, the awareness, everything that I've been studying and doing pretty much nonstop all day long for 6 months. At that time, I was really feeling it real strong. And when I went in to lay down in the bed, that's when I closed my eyes and this glowing, just like gold-colored figure of Jesus was coming towards me, and then it changed into like an angel, and then it flowed through my body. The only way I can describe it is like liquid love. And when it done that, I could feel my back, the back pain totally just leave. It's like it's almost like as if you got a shot, and you can just feel warmth go into that area, and it just heals. And that's the way my whole body felt. But at the same time, it was like almost as if he was speaking to me in my gut and telling me, you know, that a lot of things that I really don't want to get into here on the phone, you know. But he was telling me a lot of things about like what's going on now, how we're going to go forth and spread TMS, the word, let more people heal. You know, got plenty of work to do here, guys.
Do you think then, Eric, that you advise getting a good friend who can tell you those things that you don't see about yourself when you look in the mirror? Is that part of this process too? Is that what this spiritual vision gave to you? Did it reveal aspects of yourself that you didn't want to necessarily face the way a good friend does when he tells you?
What happened, it was so good. The feeling was so good. The feeling was so perfect. It was like everything I was doing up to this point, meditations, acceptance, the awareness, learning all the twos, you know, that we call it in TMS, healing all the twos. It was like everything fit perfect, and it all came together when that instant there happened. It was actually like a week after that I totally showed up.
Yeah, you say that awareness, acceptance, and meditation will eventually lead you to a point where you will suddenly understand the TMS process and know how to reverse it. So this religious vision really was like at the summit of this process that you'd been undergoing.
It's almost like something came to me, and when I say something, I'm talking about my higher power. It's almost like that came to me and said, look, you're on the right direction, you're doing good, you know, here's a great feeling. You know, and then the next morning, as I told you last week, I got up and my back was sore that next morning. But one week later, because I stayed in my studies, just like I still have been to this day, 1 week later, I was that's when I wrote my success story. That's when I was totally better as far as the pain. Because it was like that night I understood how I was working the pain in my back with my mind.
Uh-huh.
You say in
a subsequent chapter, though, that you got whacked again.
Yes.
So there was still, you still needed to go along further. In other words, this wasn't.
Yeah.
This wasn't.
Well, I got bit. You know, I got a bit by a tick, as everybody that at TMS Wiki knows. But you know, that was a bacterial. I think it was bacterial when a tick bites you like that. You know, and nearly kills you. So. I thank God that, you know, I had that night because my faith had been dropped, Bruce, at that time. My faith had been dropped a lot, and I was putting more of that spiritual faith that I was having more so towards the science knowledge. And I love science. I do. I love it with all my heart, but I was losing that part of hope of me that was full of the spiritual side, too. And that night it was like Jesus came to me, and he said, you know, this is what I felt in my body. It was like he was saying, you're on the right path. This is it. This is the way you do it. This is how you heal. All these times you've been, you know, wanting to know how to heal yourself. Now this is it. That's the way it went out.
You say
I didn't get
really
to write it like that in the book.
Eric, you say something really interesting in here about how attacking the problem through physical activity can heal you when you're younger. But then after you're 40, after you've gone through a lot more trials and tribulations and had more trauma, then you have to adapt a different strategy than the one that you used when you were younger. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, when I was younger, I'd done it when I was 30, I attacked it, hardcore weight. When I say hardcore, I'm talking about heavy weightlifting. Not fearing it. That's the main part, not fearing it. Not fearing the TMS, okay? And getting my mind off of worrying about the TMS. That, I think that's the main areas now that I know about TMS healing that helped me heal then. It wasn't the exercise, even though I thought it was the exercise then.
Yeah.
You see? But then now, you know, at 39, 40 years old, I discovered that the weightlifting was only about to kill me. It was making me feel worse and worse and worse until I just stopped and got the TMS wisdom knowledge down. And when I did that, that's when I, you know, everything started changing. I started getting better by the week.
Yeah, I noticed that if you go out and just try and walk really hard and hurt a lot, and you can get better that way for a while, but then you've got to separate the actual mental curing yourself of the mental TMS process from just this physical activity and the confidence it builds. You've actually got to undergo some kind of internal mental change. You finally figure that out after a while, that going on these wild walks or these wild bicycle rides or lifting heavier and heavier weights is not what's really making you better.
That's right. Got
to do with a change inside. It's the way you're thinking. That's what you've got to really change.
Yes. You got to change your reactions to negative outside stimuli, to things that are bothering you. You have to ask yourself, why is this bothering me? And then you have to, you know, answer that why. You have to watch your reactions, you know? And it's me and food.
Can I ask you all a question?
Please do.
Yes.
Okay. I know now, I understand. Didn't you mention earlier that, okay, I tend to let people take advantage of me a lot, which I think you all were referring to before, like with Walt and the renters. This has been a pattern over my whole life. Even my mother and my husband have taken advantage of me. I've let them. My people closest to me have taken advantage of this aspect of my personality. I figured all along it must be building up anger. Think now, I guess what I've wondered is, do you finally have to stop letting people take advantage of you to heal? Do you have to stop reacting
to what it is. Each time somebody takes advantage of you, Paula, you get upset. And when you get upset, that is a reaction under your power and under your control. Here's the thing, though. You're probably, you know, conditioned to that by now. So it's like a trigger. As soon as somebody does something to you, you automatically get upset without even when you're trying not to. So that's where you have to be aware and use awareness and mindfulness and being in the now and catch when you start to get upset. And right then when you start to get upset is when you got to go cool off, when you got to go use one of these twos that we're talking about and get yourself back in the now and get calmed down. Okay?
Well, I was able to repress it. That's what I've done, and I think I use some of my...
Well, you don't want to repress it. No, you want to face it. You want to look at it. You want to process it. Okay, say somebody made me mad. Somebody cut me off in traffic. Well, I would have to look at it. I would have to, before I reacted to them and said, hey, what did you do that for? Go ahead and right then and there, process the thought. Hey, man, this guy done that, but you know, I'm going to choose right now and I have better thoughts. You know, maybe he's just in a hurry trying to get to the hospital for his wife. You know, maybe she's pregnant. You know, I can react to this in a better way.
But what if it's something that you can do something about? For like if someone cuts you off in traffic, there's not much you can do about that other than let it go.
Yeah.
But what, like for example, our neighbor has now put a pipe draining his water into our backyard. I did not want to. It sticks over into our backyard.
Is that bothering you? Is that bothering you? It's obviously bothering you, right? I mean, that's when you brought up. Okay, well, you have to think about the emotion. As it's bothering you, you have to think about that emotion as you're feeling in your body. And right then and there, focus on that emotion, but you've got to do it in mindfulness and with forgiveness. And when I say forgiveness, you've got to release this negative emotion that you feel.
But what about standing up for yourself? I mean, isn't
Is that okay, Herbie? Can she go in and change what needs to be changed as well?
I mean, I need to
talk
with that guy.
Well, of course, you would do it all legally. Do what you have to do legally, but do all that in peace, too, and you know, with mindfulness.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Of course,
you're saying.
As you're reconditioning, of course, you're going to have backwards and forwards where all, even after you're done conditioning, you're going to have times that you're going to get angry. I mean, you're still going to be a human being. We got the yin and yang. Everybody's got it, you know. The thing is, do you want to get in an argument with this person where y'all might have further, worser, you know, outcomes, or do you want to handle it in a legal manner to where everything could come out to your better benefit other than having an angry argument, you know?
Well, no, I don't think I have to have it. I was rationalizing it by saying, oh, he at least has helped us with other things. I'll just ignore it. But I think that's the anger that has built up inside. That's a small example of letting someone take advantage of you.
Yeah, the best thing to do is do the legal matters to get it out of your system. You're going to have to do something to stand up for yourself. Always stand up for yourself. That's in TMS, too, because if you don't stand up for yourself, then you're just going to gain more TMS. So don't
That's what I'm saying.
You can. You ever heard in the boxing terms the guy that's the most calmest and quietest and you know that they box better, and the ones that get mad and get outraged, they usually swing wild and they lose the match. The one that's actually trying to use more aggression, they usually lose the match because the one with the level head always won.
Some wisdom in there. Yeah.
Pretty much the way you want to keep, you know, your reactions. You want to be the one that's using the logical level headedness instead of letting, you know, anything. And I know there's people out there right now, but people in their homes that are just causing their TMS to go haywire. And somehow, some way, they have to find a way to be at peace and change their reactions to.
Don't you think that these wolves, these users, can spot a TMS type personality and then start to try and take advantage of it? Whereas if you've changed your personality, if you've stopped TMSing, they're going to look at you and say, hey, I don't want to mess with this guy. I don't want to mess with this gal. Because I can
surely you want to stand up for yourself. Surely you want to stand up for yourself and fight for yourself if they lay hands on you. But at the same time, is there a better situation? Can I take a better route, you know? Don't let nobody bully you. Take care of your body, your mind, your temple. But, you know, is there a better way? Is there, Paula? Is there a better way? Than to be angry about it, stay angry? You get what I'm saying by holding anger and how it can bother you by holding anger?
I just think it's an example of how I got TMS, that I tried to rationalize what this bozo's doing. When we need to simply tell him, look, you've run, you know, your water into our backyard, which is already flooded. It gets the water from this whole area. I just feel like I've gotten into this over a lifetime of not standing up for myself. I don't mean in an aggressive way.
Well, it's because like you said earlier, you got a goodest personality. But just like I had a guy tell me. I think a lot of people know who he is, Ace Warren. You know, you have to, even though you got to get his personality, that doesn't give people a right to run over you. But you still have to think, how is the best way that I can reply to this, respond to this, you know, in some way that it's not going to cause me to, you know, get all nervous, upset, shaking.
Yeah.
Can I get, you know, is there another route that this will turn out for the better? And then take that route. You know, go ahead and take it. A lot of times we'll think, what is the better way? And then we won't ever go forth and do it. You know, when you think the better way, go ahead and
do it. Do you mind if I jump in there, Eric? Can I?
Go ahead.
Can I take a swing at this?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like, I think when, when it comes to standing up for oneself, it's always a fine line between standing up for yourself not enough and too much. And it's going to be tough for us to know in that situation because there are so many details that go on in your interaction with your neighbor. But when I hear you, it sounds like there's part of you which says, I haven't been standing up for myself. And, you know, I think I've studied a number of different healing techniques. One is internal family systems. Another one is Eugene Gendlin focusing, where they say that there's a part of you inside you, which is yourself. This is your best self. And if your best self is saying that it's important for you right now in your life to become better at asserting yourself and standing up for yourself and doing that in a respectful, positive way, like what Eric is describing, there very well might be something to that. And that might help you get over your TMS, and it might help you, because if you don't do that, it sounds like what you're telling us is that bucket of rage is building up for you.
Yeah.
And
that sounds like it all gets back to damaged or low self-esteem, where you want to be liked, you know, so bad that you let other people take advantage of you because your core sense of self is not quite up to standard.
And we read so much about that in Pathways to Pain Relief. You're absolutely right, Bruce. That's a great point. Well, speaking of books, though, I think does that help you, Paula?
Yes.
Good to hear. Because speaking of books, I'd love to get back to Herbie's section, because Bruce, you had this great dialogue that you always do. Was there any points that you wanted to go over? Any other additional things that you wanted to bring up with Eric?
I thought the most important part of this chapter, despite for practical TMS healing, besides the great spiritual narrative, moving from drinking for 10 years to teaching Sunday school to getting back to the Southern Baptist Church to finally having this vision, this healing vision. I thought the most useful things for a reader that was going through this were these 14 thoughts to ponder and how to know it's TMS, because they're so pertinent. Like number 3, Eric says, always strive to draw connections between your pain and certain situational and emotional patterns, asking whether you were under unusual stress of any kind at the onset of your pain symptoms. A friend of mine just did this yesterday. He said, I saw why the pain was in my shoulder, because I was having this feeling right then. He did make the connection. Eric asks, does it only occur when you're driving or when you're angry or upset? That's mindfulness. That is one of the keys, I think, to solving the problem. And the fourth point, be especially aware that very often thought precedes TMS pain instead of the other way around. Does the pain develop in the morning after being absent all night? These are ways to how to know it's actually TMS and not something physical. You'll find that you'll be thinking about your back only a moment before the pain starts there. And I've noticed
that
too.
Wow, that used to happen so much.
It's like you wake up in the morning, you don't think about your back, and then all of a sudden there's a little flash where you say, what's my back? And then a few seconds later, the process starts.
It sounds like you got a story to tell about that, Eric.
Yeah, I remember it was about, 2 months into it, and I'd been waking up a few mornings, and I'd been feeling better for a couple of days, probably about a week at that time. And I thought in my mind one morning when I woke up, wow, I wonder where the pain went. This is amazing. As soon as I had that thought, and this was just a few seconds after I woke up, as soon as I had it, because I was still laying there, as soon as I had that thought, I felt the pain go straight to my back, And this was like, and I was like, oh, man, I done messed up. Something I messed up. And by then I already knew that it was something psychological. I knew that it wasn't, you know, structural. I've been laying there fine all night. I didn't just lift up a 100-pound bar or nothing. So, you know, and then the next day I'm thinking to myself, I just jump right up out of bed again, you know. And I decided to look out the window. I heard somebody pull up to come and see me. And as soon as they pulled up to come and see me, I thought, wow, man, my back's doing better again. This is great. And soon as I done that, the pain came on me, you know. So it gave me this little, you know, thought pattern here to be able to tell other people, are these things happening to you too? Because if they are, then, you know, it could be TMS. And the reason I know this is because I went straight through it, you know. And this happened to me probably for about a week straight before I finally got it to leave again. And that, at that time, at that stage, that's the reason I was really loving it, because I was having more times being healed than I was going through days, you know, hurting by that time. So that's when everybody starts jumping on. Yeah, that's the tipping point.
I noticed that too. That's when you start to get better, when there are greater periods of symptom-free activity. And also, those are the points when you're not obsessing, too. You can't remember anymore to obsess.
It kind of shocked me.
You can forget about it. Please.
It kind of shocked me because I thought in my mind, you know, wow, it's not there. And then all of a sudden it hit. And I was like, wow. You know, what really hit me, what I really understood later on, is that is how TMS can be that tricky. You know, even when you think you got it, it'll come and hit you. Just to try it one more time to see if it can hang in there and get you to give up. I didn't never give up. That's the main point. Don't never give up. Keep going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's because we're all resourceful and intelligent. So it's resourceful and intelligent, too.
Because it is us.
Really,
let's see. So there
really
was a cause.
It's really us. It's not something out there. Although we look at it that way, don't we, after a while? We objectify.
Yeah. It's our higher consciousness. It's our consciousness at an awareness level, at a higher awareness level.
Yeah. Could I ask you all one quick question?
Sure, jump on in.
I hate to get up in the morning. I'm comfortable in bed, but the minute I get up, I become aware of my shoulder. It doesn't hurt real bad, but I notice it. The pain has subsided over time, but it doesn't feel normal.
Uh-huh.
So I put off getting up in the mornings. And lately we haven't been getting up till like 11:30. Once I'm up, I start doing better, and now I'm doing more. I'm lifting more. I don't mean weights. I mean stuff like normal household stuff, you know, like sweeping with a broom or carrying a light thing around the house. So I'm just now starting to actually use my arms just to do normal things, which I haven't done in all these months.
That's great.
But I'm doing more and more. But the question is... Yeah.
I remember at a time when all I needed to do was to plug in the vacuum cleaner and start vacuuming, and bango, there it was.
Yep.
Now I don't think about it. I don't think about that connection. And I just start vacuuming, and maybe I have a thought about it. But you see, it's a thought about it. And then it goes away afterwards. It isn't like a scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's funny, because one of my worsening symptoms more than a year ago had to do with vacuuming.
Uh-huh.
I vacuumed a little bit, and then after that, I took a drink of water, and my hand shook. That had never, I didn't understand that at the time, but that was before I went to the first doctor. But and of course, I haven't vacuumed since then, and I'm still afraid to vacuum, so that'll come later. But I did at least...
We hear you, Paula. That makes sense. So
it
sounds like, you know, you're waking up in the morning and you're feeling your attention is on your shoulder. And
right.
it feels like that's what the TMS wants, is the TMS wants the attention to be on your shoulder. So once you've figured out that it's safe to do these activities, and the doctor's the one who can get, once you've got your TMS diagnosis, you can say, you know, I know this activity is safe and I'm just going to totally ignore it, you know?
Well,
Eric,
I'm already
kind
of doing that for us. I feel these things are safe, and I don't have any repercussions afterwards.
Good for
you.
But what
I was going to, yeah, But the thing is, what I was going to say is my situation is different because although I had a lot of pain in the past, a lot of that's gone. I just mostly have discomfort now. But what I have is an arm that doesn't have full range of motion, so that's different. And what I have been doing is
it's really not different, I don't believe. No, it's still part of your conditioning.
Oh yeah. Well, in fact, in the Great Pain Deception, he has frozen shoulder as a TMS substitute.
Yeah.
Steve-O, it's in the back. And I already
figured this out. Did you cut a tendon or something? Did you cut a tendon in your arm or something? The reason you can't straighten it out?
No. There's no. I don't have any damage.
Yeah.
No.
You said it was different. I was just wanting you to know because I couldn't raise my arm up, I don't know if the guys can see me, but I couldn't raise my arm up no higher than that right there, Y'all can see what I can do now with it. I can do twists. I couldn't go above that. I'm showing them a level area. That's as high as I could get my arm. And I couldn't straighten my arm out all the way either. But now, it's really no problem. But I had to just see me doing it in my own mind and recondition to it.
Yeah. I've been trying to do that, Eric. I've been trying to picture it in my mind, raising it. And, I've raised it higher and higher. But what I was getting at is, should I not test it every day and, see how if I can raise it any higher? Should I just leave that alone?
It's the knowledge that's going to heal you. Yeah. It's the knowledge that's going to heal you. It's not, you raising your arm or you doing any of that. It's the knowledge that's going to heal you. But you do every now and then. I wouldn't say once a day, but I would say about once a week. You do need to, test your range of motion. You do. I mean, even stretching is beneficial. For exercise and stuff. And everything you do for exercise, you want to do it for your health benefits, not because it's going to, make your arm better, but At the same time, it all adds up to be a better day when we add exercise and stuff in when you're ready,
Right. Go ahead.
But it's always going to be the knowledge. It's always going to be what you learn, your awareness, and how to be calm and soothing, and so many different factors that's going to help you heal.
Okay.
A couple days ago, I found that I could raise my leg up another 3 inches and stand on it way higher up. But I wasn't testing. I'd given up on it. And then one day I just noticed it didn't hurt as much. And all of a sudden I said, hey, my leg is 3 inches higher and I'm standing way higher up and it isn't hurting. It wasn't like I tried to make it do that. And it wasn't like I was testing all the time to see if it would. It just did. I mean, if you're testing all the time and you're monitoring all the time, I think you're staying within the range of limitation that TMS wants you to be in.
Yeah. You're focusing on it.
I think Bruce is hitting it on the nail on the head. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wants you to be focusing on that.
Yeah.
Can I say something quickly? This is Carrie. For me, because my pain was, I have trigeminal neuralgia as a symptom and as my main symptom. And for me, that means not being able to brush your teeth, not being able to eat on the right-hand side of my face. I had to eat everything through a straw. Most things I had to blend or puree up so I could drink them and get it basically get it back to my throat without being in my mouth. I couldn't touch my face, I couldn't talk, couldn't do anything like that. And from reading Steve's book and the Amir book and, when I read it and they said, well, I'm just going to, I think Fred Amir said, he set goals for himself. By the end of the week, I'm going to do this. For me, my thing was, my first thing was, I want to be able to drink without a straw. Or I want to be able to eat without blending things up. And it was one of those things where I think you have to, for me, it was reflecting on the knowledge of what I know. And what I knew was there wasn't any reason for that pain to be there. And when I read those things, I thought, well, there's no way I'm just going to be able to set this goal and just be able to do that. Like, I've gone all these years and not been able to, and been in just such so much pain that I couldn't even force myself through eating. How could I possibly, or brushing my teeth, you know, how could I possibly just set a goal and do it? And I think there's a part of you that the knowledge, and I guess that sounds silly to say that because that's what we're all talking about, but that knowledge, the power of that knowledge, and spending more time instead of reflecting on the pain, but reflecting of the knowledge of knowing that it's not structural, and the things that, to me, I call like the little mysteries, like, well, if this would have been structural, then why didn't it hurt then? Or why didn't it hurt when I did, you know, such and such? Or just those little kind of glimmers of when it didn't hurt and that didn't make sense. So I kind of had to reflect on what I knew, and eventually just it kind of grew and grew. My goal kind of just grew and grew and grew to the point where, you know, now I can eat on the right side of my face. I can brush my teeth. I can, you know, have the shower on the right-hand side of my face. Like, those are things I could never do. And, you know, there's just no explanation, no other explanation as to why I couldn't do those things, and I was in so much intense pain then, and why I can do it now. So it was just setting small, especially small goals at first, and reflecting on what it was that I knew as opposed to what I was afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to anybody?
Absolutely. Yeah. It makes a huge amount of sense. And thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Does that help, Paula?
Yes, and I was wondering, Carrie, how long did that process take you to go from where you were in so much pain with so many restrictions to where it sounds like you've overcome it?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm still in the healing process, and just thanks. Every time I get on the call, maybe you guys get tired of hearing it, but just the support of everybody has been so amazing, and I have read so many books, and I'm 44, and I've had this since I was in my mid-teens, and not to the crazy or the top painful. I had a 10-year remission, and it would kind of come and go, and then a few years ago, it just came and got worse and worse and worse and worse, and just wouldn't go away, and was on lots of meds, and so I'm in the healing stage, but to go from just that kind of typical of TMS, increasing pain, you know, and as I've said to Forrest, and I'm sure I've said it to Herbie too, you know, going to from the point of feeling like that I, you know, suicide, I hate to say suicidal thoughts, but really knowing that there was going to come a point where I wasn't going to be able to live the way I was, you know, that kind of pain, to be in a place where I am now, where my pain is so, so minimal and so infrequent that, you know, it's just amazing to be being in a healing state and after having been in fear for so long and so doom and gloom. I had read the Sarno books, probably a little over a year ago, and I saw myself in them, but I didn't really, you know, it would be easier if there was something else. It would be easier if you could take a pill or you could go to and I'm not a pill person. I'm like, you know, I don't even take a pill for, you know, an aspirin for headache. You know, I did everything else. I did nutrition. I did laser therapy. I did acupressure. I did acupuncture. I did chiropractic. I did everything. And something other than having to deal with yourself and dealing with, you know, all that painful stuff, you just want there to be an easier solution. And so somehow I went back and I actually have them on audiobook, and I listened to the Sarno books again, and suddenly I just felt, it was more than I saw myself on. I'm like, I felt this deep connection to them. And then I just started reading and I, you know, was getting so frustrated because it's like, why, you know, I did the Brady 6 weeks. I was like, why aren't I healing? Why isn't it, you know, why 6 weeks later, why is this not gone? And I think there was the doubt in me having the support of people, and like, was it Walt that said wanting someone to identify with what you said or what your experience was? Is that Walt that said that?
I think we might all say it, but Walt might have said it. Yep.
Someone just said, somebody said it this evening, but having the actual voices and, you know, even though you read the books and can identify with people, having actual humans and that connection and the support of everybody has just leaps and bounds for me in making progress. So are you new to the site and the calls?
Yes. Just last week was my first week to be on this.
Trying to make the calls and try to hang in there with everything. Just try to have the confidence and don't doubt. And it's just pretty, I mean, I still definitely doubt and I still definitely fear, but it's so much easier to get it in check when you're making positive progress. And you have everyone to support you to say, you know, you're going in the right direction.
Right, right. It's funny you say about the Sarno books on audio book, because I got it and yesterday listened for the first time to Sarno. I'd read the books already. But
isn't it wonderful?
Really makes it, yes, it's wonderful hearing his voice.
Yeah.
Anyway. We can all relate to one another. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Carrie. That was really wonderful to hear. I could say, I love hearing myself talk. Just joking. But it's it's really nice to hear someone else talk once in a while too. I think it's good for the listeners too, because they want to hear people who are, you know, going through it like themselves. Yeah, so thanks for sharing the story.
There are two more questions, two more answers that Eric has about how to know it's TMS in this list at the end of chapter 5.
That is a great thing to get to. Did that help a little bit, Paula?
Yeah.
Yeah, but definitely.
Good to hear it. I think Carrie did a great job. I almost want to call for a round of applause here, but thank you. So Bruce, why don't we that's what the Peer Network is here for. It's to empower people to share their own experiences and help give each other hope. So yeah, thanks for calling in.
It's like theory and practice.
There you go.
A lot of theory, but then you hear it in practice from these people talking about their stories. How various it is, but how the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, but I guess I am supposed to be that whipcracker. Bruce, you want to say those?
Yeah, we
really
only got a couple more and we're out of the
woods. Yeah, let's do that. And then I promised last week, and I think this is wonderful. I really want to give Eric a chance to talk about, I want to hear if there's anything else in the chapter that he wants to make sure that we hit before the end of the call. He's the man who wrote it, and there's a lot in there. B, there were a couple things from last week that he wanted to go over, and I promised him I'd give him, we said 8 to 10 minutes, so I want to go over some of those things that he was talking about with the swish from last week. But tell me about those two points, Bruce.
Yeah, Eric. He says that you can tell, Eric says that you can tell it's TMS. If the quality of the pain, dull, sharp, dull, ongoing, intermittent, if it matches up with certain preconceived ideas you might have about how a particular symptom might feel. That sounded a lot like that shoulder in the morning.
Yes.
Yeah, like you have an idea already about having the symptom, and there it is in potential in the shoulder, like a mental image.
Good point. Yeah.
You get up. These sentences are like theory, but then your experience is like the praxis, is like the practical aspect or illustration of that, of the theory that Eric is talking about. And he also says, does the pain have a tendency to go away when you're busy, preoccupied with something else? Oh, yes, 1,000 times yes. That's how I figured it out. That's the part of the unlearning or the learning process, when you start to notice that. And that's how you can tell it's not a tumor growing in your back. Because if you're paying attention to something else and you're not feeling it, and it's staying away for a while afterwards, there's nothing there physical that's causing it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get those two points out because this is such a great list, these 14 thoughts to ponder.
It's a good list, yeah.
How to know it's TMS. You really want to be able to distinguish and figure it out for yourself. What is that list you're supposed to make up, you know, like a reality check type of list? That
evidence sheet.
Yeah,
yes,
the evidence sheet
evidence
that
sheet,
Alan Gordon
yeah.
advocates. This is how you can do it, by answering these five or six questions that Eric has written down here conveniently for us all in this chapter. You can go back to this chapter and check it out.
Good point. A little evidence sheet cliff notes.
Yeah, well, you know.
I remember.
Have a cheat sheet.
Can you guys hear me?
Okay.
Just barely, but yep.
Okay.
Sounds like it's your turn here. It sounds like it's these 8 to 10 minutes.
I remember so much of all the times that I had learned through reading probably 1,000 posts. That had taught me. I wouldn't know which various ones or if it was a mixture or what it was, but I remember it all clicked. I went through all that. Everything there, that was how I started becoming aware, how I started knowing, how I started, you know, catching the TMS and the act, you know, as we sort of say. So I could, so my mind would be better aware of it so I could tune it out. I learned how to not focus on where the pain was, you know? And all of these ideas just came out of going through all the steps. And I thought everybody needed to know, you know, and here's a good checklist. So it turned out to be pretty good, I thought.
Could I ask one other question in regard to pain? I've noticed this past week sometimes that I've had most of the time it's just kind of a dull ache or discomfort. And then a few times I had some uncharacteristic pains just out of nowhere. Or I had some tingling in my foot. And I wondered if I hadn't had in months. I wondered if the TMS, once you start catching on to it, do you start having some? It seemed like it was kind of making jabs. Do you know what I'm saying? I wasn't worried about it.
Definitely.
This. Yeah, I think it's the TMS. I mean, I
absolutely,
just
absolutely yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no see because as I get better, like I use it. My index is walking up a flight of stairs at the gym, and I used to limp up, and I had to use the rail, and then I'd have to raise on one foot and. I try and hide it from people so they wouldn't see it, and I was limping. And now I walk right up there, and I'm improving tremendously. However, mm-hmm. the TMS continuously reminds me with pain that comes from nowhere. It's like mm-hmm. abstract pain from someplace mm-hmm. else. Although I'm getting better, way better, that pain mm-hmm. exists as a separate intellectual, mental category. And it's using it to try and call me back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just have to tell myself that, oh, this pain is incidental because it isn't actually interfering with your movement, is it? No, you're getting better, aren't you? But then it's trying to call me back with these little stings and jabs. And I just have to keep it out of my mind and just say, screw this, you know?
Yeah, I have the same thing, and I was telling Herbie that now that I talk to everybody, and I guess my assumption is that everyone has back pain, and so I have started to have this back pain thing, and the funny thing about it is I'll say to myself, this is TMS, and it'll go away, but I'm not afraid of that pain, and it is that kind of, you know, that tightening of your back to the point where you kind of always like have to hold on to something. And, you know, so it is it's a significant discomfort, but I'm not afraid of those other, and I have a couple other things that have kind of started to to pop up. And I kind of just have to laugh at it because, like you said, you know, it's that calling you back, but I don't have the fear associated with those pains that I do with my facial pain. And that's the trick for me personally to overcome.
Well, my fear is that...
It's a ghost trying to call you back from the grave, isn't it? It's a
ghost.
Yeah,
but I think it's giving itself away, though, by that. Isn't it?
Exactly.
Kind of
something? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's
but
desperate.
My fear, it's desperate. You've got it on the run.
Yeah.
But I think.
But doesn't mean it's going to go away quickly. I mean, like, it's always a process. It takes time, you know. It's got its ups and downs, but that's totally fine. But it's
right.
Like it's tipping its hand to you and saying, yeah. Yeah, I'm a little worried here.
Yeah. But those little things are the things that give you strength to, or clues that confirm, yes, it's TMS, that give you the strength to, you know, raise your shoulder higher or whatever it is that's your struggle. It's the little giveaways, even if they are pains or discomforts, it's those little confirmations and giveaways that give you the strength and the confirmation to keep on the healing path.
Yeah.
This
so
is
for
an
like,
interesting... Oh, excuse me.
For me, I was taught... So my diagnosis was always repetitive strain injuries, and I was taught that, you know, if you get nerve damage, that's when it gets serious. So whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was taught for a long time. So I never had any neurological
signs.
I never had any numbness, never had any tingling. The pain didn't shoot. You know, it was fairly straightforward. So I learned about TMS, then I got better. Well, what do you think I got? I got neurological symptoms all of a sudden, and that fits. Sounds like an extinction burst to me, you know, all of a sudden. And it was exactly the area innervated by the cubital nerve, so it looked a lot like cubital tunnel syndrome, and I just decided to completely ignore it, typed right through it, and I was fine. And it came back, I think, once, maybe twice, maybe three times, a couple times, but I never let it bother me, and it's not been a problem at all.
That's really interesting about Eric talking about not being able to raise his arm up above a certain level. A surgeon would look at that in terms of range of motion and would instantly say, torn supraspinatus. We got you dialed. We figured it out. And now, look, I've had them do that to me where they say, you've got to go in and have an operation. Your arm is going to stay there forever. And now, what's it doing up here? I mean, obviously, it was TMS. It was not a torn supraspinatus. There may have been little tears in the supraspinatus, but that they can't just go on that. I mean,
But the thing healed on its own, and that's a good thing. It was just TMS for you. All right. But I do want to get back to Eric. He's been really patient, and we are getting to that 10:30 mark, so we're 50% over, and I want to make sure we do get in here. So, Eric, you were saying something about that list. I think you had pointed out one of the things that helped you figure out your own TMS. Was there another you wanted to call out?
Oh, no, not right now. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me good?
We can hear you well enough. Yep.
Well enough? Okay, I guess, you know, going ahead and getting the swish out and just telling the best I can tell of it for the next 10 minutes would be a wrap, you know? Because this is pretty much going to take at least the 10 minutes to get it, okay?
That sounds wonderful. So for those, I guess most of us were here last week, but for anyone who's listening to the podcast right now, the swish is something that Eric, a.k.a. Herbie, I call him Herbie sometimes, but his name as an author is Eric, and he had talked about in his previous chapter, a technique from NLP or neuro-linguistic programming. So take it away, Eric.
last week we was talking about conditionings and belief systems and triggers and anchors. And I want to sort of tie all this in right quick. The reason I brought up in the last chapter about belief systems and conditionings and so forth, so that you guys can kind of see where I'm at with the swish and why I think it's such a good tool to use with the TMS healing. Okay? Okay. I'm going to tell the story sort of like this, okay? We're born, guys. Okay, that's how we get problems, okay? First, we're born. We're born and we get problems, okay? But anyway, before we get all those problems, we get conditioned. We start to, you know, pay attention as we grow into our family and to our friends and to people around us and stuff. So we get conditioned that way. Some people call it the first thoughts that we learn imprints, okay? So we get conditioned to our surroundings, and those conditionings, as we get older, they become belief systems. They're called belief systems, and like going to church every Sunday and your religion that you believe in, then it's a belief system. And so much more in our life becomes belief systems, okay? And then as we learn the belief systems and we have the conditionings and we get older, we start to learn how to go from thought to thought. And as we go from thought to thought and start to get these thought streams, they're called states. You get into a state, like you might be watching a good football game and you'll be in a calm, relaxed state or a happy jumping up, down, and moving state. It's, you know, because we have good states and we have bad states. We have good memories, we got bad memories. Another name for a state, like being in a state, is being in trance. Like you're watching has anybody ever told you something like, you know, the movie's so good, you know, you watch it like, anyway, you can be watching a movie and when you're interested in the movie, you're in trance. All trance means, guys, is you're focusing on something. That's what trance means. You got your mind focused on this one thing, okay? So it might be a movie or something like that. So that's what state is. State management is where you go in and you manage how you feel in those states. Like, say you got a bad feeling that's starting to come on you before you do a big test or something. Well, you could change your state from a nervous, you know, doubtful state to a courageous, you know, powerful state if you know how to do state management. But in order to know how to do state management and in order to know how to do the swish and so much more, we have to learn how do we record what we know, our memories. How do we record our memories? How do we record them? If you think for a minute, you record your memories through, you know, your senses, your five senses. This is how you know your memories, through what you see, through what you hear, through what you feel, through what you smell, through what you taste. You know, and these senses in the NLP field are called submodalities. If you can go in and change the thought patterns that you're having, if they're negative thought patterns, if you can go in and change the negative memory, if you're having it, then what it'll do, it'll help you feel better. It'll help you get to a better feeling instead of, you know, like going from negative thought to negative thought to negative thought. You can actually get to where you're having a positive thought, and then when you think, like, say, the neighbor's water is running in my backyard, you can actually change that thought and by swish to where the negative energy from that emotion won't bother you as much, and then you'll just know what to do, and then you'll just do it, okay? That's the whole point of talking about the swish, was to take away...
You use these acupuncture points in the hand in order to anchor those states as memory devices, like mnemonic devices, like ways of recalling them through association. Is that it?
If you was close to me, I could just tap you on the shoulder. I could tell you to think of like, you know, a good time or your most courageable time you've ever had or the time that everything just went right that day. I could have you go there. I could have you feel the feelings, smell the smell, you know, hear what people saying around you, and you'll start to get this emotion of what was happening at that time in your life. And then as you're having that, I would like tap you on the shoulder and say, you're doing good. And when that little tap there is an anchor. And then when I came back later and say you was thinking of the negative situation, well, I would just walk over to you and I would tap you on the shoulder again. And it would instantly bring back the good memory again. And when it brings back the good memory, it'll drown out the bad memory.
So swishing is really equivalent with memory reconsolidation then, in that term used in psychology. And you can recall it with a trigger that you associate with that feeling. Once you've done that memory reconsolidation and thought about that time, that day that was the best day of your life, or that peak moment. So you can keep recalling that mood with a tap or pressure on the thumb.
Yes, do that, or just having the memory and a visual, like a visual memory in your mind. You can do the same anchors can be, you can do it through words.
You say you can do it later on with just images and pictures.
You can do it with the images and pictures that you see in your mind. Like for instance, you know, you see, again, you see the backyard being tore up. That's the negative image. That's the image that you want to change. But you'll have somebody's face attached to that, too, that's causing it. So you'll see their face, you know. And what you'll do is you'll put a positive image behind it and let it bleed through the image you've seen in your imagination. Why do I say the imagination, Bruce? Because that's where our thoughts are. That's where our memories are. They're in the imagination. So you go there, you change the submodalities or the senses to this negative memory by doing the switch. If you think how we collect information, you'll find that it's through our senses, you know, through touch, smell, taste, hearing, and feeling. That's how you collect the knowledge, you know. So that's how you pick up on life. That, you know, it's that's where you go to the imagination to change something that's bothering you. For instance, all day long, and a lot of times in my life before I knew all this, I would go from this one negative thought stream to another negative thought stream, and then I'd go read my positive thinking books. And then I'd try to think positive as long as I could, but that negative thought stream would come right back. And, you know, it was pretty much a battle going. But if I could get that swish to happen, then it would make the negative thought stream that was bothering me that day leave.
So this works through repetition, too. I notice where you say it takes 21 to 30 days of doing this in order to, imprint this swish or this state, this connection.
Happen in an instant. The 21 to 30 days make it a habit. You know, I made it a habit. And when you make things habit, it just comes so simple to you. You know, to where if you just try to go and do this once or twice, it's just not enough. You really need to repeat these steps, you know, like 7 times in a row, 4 times in a row. And then it'll sink in, and then you'll start really understanding how to do these steps.
Yeah, I noticed that with the 12 things you should remember, the 12 key thoughts. They fade out after a while when you're just repeating it all the time. But just the force of repetition, finally you start to get it. You know, then it starts to mean something. First it means something intellectually, then you forget about it from doing it a long time, and then just from doing it a long time, one day you start to believe it. I don't know how you describe that. It just, being stubborn, I guess, keeping it up. And you're saying this swish works the same way.
Well, you know, I did a little minor switch one time, and this person was bothering me, and they was sort of getting me upset. And I just saw the best version of myself, and I let the best version of myself disassociated, you know, the picture, like going behind the person. And then I became a part of that person. So if I was going to be upset at that person, it was me looking at me, you know. So that was a pretty good switch.
Yeah, I think they call this head work.
and the part that's so hard for people to get is really like a 4-step process. You know, it's really, there's thousands of ways to do this, guys. They just came out with like an 800-page book called The Switch, and and they just got so many different ways to do this. But, you know, you got one simple technique on how to do it, you can just go through the day wiping out negative, you know, thought streams off your phone.
And is that what it's about? It's about getting rid, or is it about getting rid of the negative charge on memories?
Yes, it's about getting rid of the negative charge on the memories, getting rid of negative thought streams, and stuff like that. Yes, it's
gotcha.
Yeah, it really. There's so many other things that help with, but when I used it for the symptom imperatives that I was having, I noticed that the thought streams I would have, as I wrote in these steps here, I noticed that when I would have certain thought streams that the pain would be there. So then when I would be thinking about that thought stream, I would go ahead and swish it. Say it was somebody's face that might have been associated with something that angered me or had me upset. It might have been 10 years ago. It might have been 5 years prior. I would just look at the picture of the face. I would imagine a black and white dot out in the middle of the picture. And this is where everybody gets confused because it seems so simple, but this is the technique. This is how you do it. This is the process. I'm going to shoot it out right quick, and then people can rewind and listen to it and do it if they wish. And what you do is you just look at whatever it is that's bothering you. If you can see it, if you can see it in a visual. And if you can't, just try to feel it. Try to feel it in your body. And then try to hear something that might be bothering you. And usually if you look up by this time, you'll be able to see a picture. So say if you see a picture of somebody's face that's bothering you, you look at the picture, like it's a big frame on a wall, and you look at a black and white dot out in the middle of that picture. You expand it to cover the whole wall. Nothing but black and white at this time. And then you look at that black and white wall color for just a few seconds, and then you imagine a yellow dot out in the middle of that big, you know, black and white wall color. And then you let it expand to a big, yellow, bright yellow color. And then you look at that for a few seconds, and then you look at a white dot out in the middle of the yellow wall. And then you let the white dot expand. Imagine you've got a rock in your hand. Throw it at the big white wall. Watch it bust. Go through an imaginary fake hole in the floor. And then look at something white for a few seconds. And then try to think back on the negative memory or the negative whatever charge it was to that memory, and you won't be able to do it. It'll take the negative charge out of the memory. That's the steps right there. Those last 2 minutes.
I imagine that would be it would be hard to keep a negative thought in mind while going through all of that. And I think it's good to make it concrete by telling us the steps right there. So thanks for that example.
Yeah, that last part was it.
Seems like a.
Oh, I think Kirby's still talking. Let
okay, yeah.
Well, the last part there, the other part was just, you know, why how does it work and why does it work? That's the reason I wanted to bring up, you know, the conditions, the belief systems, and stuff like that. But the main part was the last part that we really, you know, it really just seems so simple. You know, a lot of people hear about colors and this and that, and they think it's so simple that they don't even try. You know, and that's where they're losing. That's where they're losing out on learning the beauty of this thing called the swish.
You have to actually do it.
Yeah. Yes. Do those four steps for, you know, and you'll see it. You'll see it'll knock out the negative charge. Okay, Bruce, what was you going to say?
Oh, I just thought that reprogrammed dreams can do that too. So that, I guess that's why this is a power therapy. It's in the same basket with...
It's considered a power therapy. The power therapy of the faster EFT, I've seen him do the same NLP switch. Well, not exactly the same NLP swish, but I watch him do swishes with everybody he sits down and counts on. I actually see the swish doing the change, and not the tapping, but I'm not saying the tapping don't change people either, because I like tapping too. But I don't know how the tapping works, but, you know, that's the meridian line.
Mm-hmm. Now, the title of this NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, where is the linguistic in all of this? Where is the language part of it? I can see the symbols, you know, taking the charge off of a bad memory and then reconsolidating, performing memory reconsolidation and then being able to call back the good memory all the time. But what's it got to do with linguistic exactly?
I mean, I suppose all of it is linguistics, in that if someone's guiding you through that switch pattern, they're using their linguistics.
Yes, you got to know how to use you can use the language in a lot of different ways. You know, there's whole studies on language and how we use it and all. And one of the co-inventors was a linguistic professor. I mean, he taught linguistics. Isn't there a teaching called linguistics before?
Yeah. Linguistics.
Yeah, John Grinder was the guy that taught linguistics. So he would hear certain phrases and matches that were in people's voices that they were modeling. In other words, that they were creating this NLP after. NLP, all it means is the study of excellence, okay? NLP means the study of excellence. It means going out and you as your own certain separate person, you study the people that you want to be like in your life, and you know these steps on how to study them right, and then you become like them. That's the study of excellence. John Grinder and his partner Richard Bandler, they modeled the famous psychology Milton Erickson and Virginia Satir and Fritz Perls, and they came up with the swish and other psychological phenomena that people used to call magic.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for that, Eric. That was really helpful.
Yeah, it took longer than the 10 minutes, like you said. I put it in there as best I could.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Does anyone have any questions about that? Any questions about swish? Did that make sense?
I don't think it ever makes sense until they actually do it. No?
I think so.
Yeah, until you actually...
You have to take the trip.
Yeah, you got to take the trip. That's right. You don't have to trip out while you're doing it by a long shot, but you know, it's a nice ride.
You know, maybe, Herbie, you can make a YouTube video. I know you're moving right now, so now wouldn't be the time to do it, but maybe you can make a YouTube video where you're just, it's like a meditation tape where you're just talking, and they don't have to watch you. They can just kind of, they can just listen to that, and it's like you're there with them. I wonder if that would help.
A guided meditation tape for NLP swishing.
Exactly.
Like a how-to. Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I've never seen one. That's brilliant. I'm going to do that. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Herbie, could I ask you something real fast?
Yes, go ahead.
Horace said you're moving to Texas, and I was wondering where. I'm from Oklahoma originally.
Okay.
I was wondering where you're moving.
It's Austin.
Austin. Oh, that's good. My cousin lives near there.
Okay.
My family's from there. That's a neat place.
Yes, yes, it is. And maybe I can see you sometime when you come to see your family.
I'm going to be visiting my cousin there at some point. That would be great.
You two should get in touch. After the recording stops, I'll share your wiki usernames, and you can send a PM.
Okay.
A lot of music in Austin.
Yes.
Place to go in Texas for music.
All right, well, I think we are wrapping up. Let's continue this conversation about Austin and all the people we know in Austin. I'm going to stop the recording now. I want to thank everyone. I thought this was an awesome session. Thank you all so much for your participation, for sharing your stories, for sharing your wisdom, for sharing your questions, and, of course, to Walt and Herbie for sharing this wonderful, wonderful book that they've written. I guess that's it. See you all next week.
Okay.
Bye, Al.
Bye-bye.